Today's reading is from John chapter 20, verses 24 to 31, which can be found on page 1089 and 1090 in the Church Bibles. That's 1089 in the Church Bibles. Now Thomas, called Didymus, one of the 12, was not with the disciples when Jesus came. So the other disciples told him, "We have seen the Lord." But he said to them, "Unless I see the nail marks in his hands, and put my finger where the nails were, and put my hand into his side, I will not believe it." A week later, his disciples were in the house again, and Thomas was with them. Though the doors were locked, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." Then he said to Thomas, "Put your finger here. See my hands. Reach out your hand and put it into my side. Stop doubting and believe." Thomas said to him, "My Lord and my God." Then Jesus told him, "Because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed." Jesus did many other miracles in the presence of his disciples, which were not recorded in this book. But these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name.
We're going to begin by looking at a clip from a music video by the band 1975. And I've been told to warn us that if we're sensitive to flashing images, just close our eyes at this moment because there's a couple of flashing images. So let's begin with that. Sorry, you've got me back. But hopefully that gives us a bit of a taste of that music video. It's by the band 1975. I saw it a couple of years ago. And I was fascinated by that song, and when I looked at what the band said about it, they described it as the gem of hope amongst all the rubble. It's very striking, isn't it? In that music video, the rubble we see, the buildings on fire, the tanks firing, the warfare, and yet through that song, there's this sense that I'd love it if we could make it. And the reason I chose that is because I think that's where we find ourselves in the 21st century. We love it if we make it. We love to have hope. But there's so much around us that gives us reason to doubt that hope. Perhaps it is the world. You would love to be more hopeful, but then you look at our world, a world where there's climate emergencies, where there's war on our continent, where there's war on our social media platforms, and you think to yourself, I just can't see a way to find hope as I look at our world. Or perhaps you look at your own self, and you'd love it if you could find hope in your life, but then you look at the struggles, the cost of living crisis, difficulties at work, and of course, you look at your own life, which you know has an expiry date, and you think to yourself, is there really reason to hope? Or perhaps it comes down to how you feel. You love to be hopeful, but then you know from bitter experience that this world doesn't give happy endings. Or perhaps you'll love to be hopeful, but you just think, I don't deserve it. So we end up saying to ourselves, look, I'll love it if we made it, but the wealth of evidence is that we probably won't. Yes, we'd love to be more hopeful, but actually there are more reasons to despair. But running against that is this book of John, which we've been looking at for the last 2 weeks, because John comes to us with a message of hope. 2 weeks ago, we saw in chapter 11, Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead. And you'll remember there that Jesus promised life beyond death. It's a message of hope. And last week, we saw Jesus encounter the Samaritan woman. And Jesus said to her, I can give you water, living water. I can give you life in all its fullness. Again, a message of hope. But how is this any different from that vague wish that I hope we can make it? What are the grounds of this hope? Well, that's where Thomas comes in today. See, Thomas here gives us the answer to that hope. Why you and me can move from that just vague sense of, I love it if we could make it, to actually finding real grounds for hope. See, Thomas goes on a journey from disbelief to belief, and then, as we're going to see this morning, that has massive implications for you and me. Let's begin by looking at Thomas in his unbelief, where we see that not seeing is not believing. Now, it's worth saying that since last week, we're picking up the action right at the end of this gospel. Jesus has died and he's risen. And earlier on in this chapter, Jesus has appeared to Mary and to the disciples. Except that is Thomas. We read in verse 24 that he was not with the 12 disciples. Now, we're not told explicitly why not, but there's a hint here that something is amiss. See, John points out very deliberately that he is one of the 12, and it's as if he's saying, look, remember, he should be with this 12. See, this is not the first time we meet Thomas. We meet Thomas back in chapter 11, where he says, let's go and die with Jesus. He's very zealous. He's right up for the mission. And in chapter 14, we see Thomas perhaps a little bit more confused as he says to Jesus, we don't know where you're going, so how do we know the way? And here at chapter 20, where there's a big hint that that hope has evaporated. Now, you certainly see that in his reaction. See, the disciples come to Thomas, they say, we've seen the Lord. And notice what Thomas says in verse 25 back. He says, unless I see the nail marks in his hands and put my finger where the nails were and put my hand into his side, I will not believe it. It's very emphatic in the original here. It's a kind of what's called a double negative. I will never, ever believe it. See, Thomas is absolutely sure there is no hope in this situation. See, that sort of response he makes is the sort of response you make when you're absolutely convinced that you're not going to be proven wrong. If someone said to me, I saw an alien last week, I would say, well, unless I met the alien myself, unless I went up in their spaceship, unless I ate Martian food with them, I would never believe it. Because I know it's never going to happen. And it's similar here with Thomas. He knows that dead people don't rise. And so he says, unless I can put my finger in the marks in his hands, my hand in his side, I will never, ever believe. It's worth seeing, isn't it, that skepticism about the Christian faith is not a new idea. It's right there at the beginning, right there with one of Jesus' closest followers. He would love to hope, I'm sure, but there is no grounds for hope. All that hope that Jesus promised, life after death, of new life in him, well, it had evaporated with Jesus' last breath. But this is why Thomas is so helpful for you and me. Because Thomas is where we find ourselves so often, isn't he? See, Thomas is not some sort of willing convert. You know, he's not the keen bean, ready to say, yes, I believe you, Jesus. He's there saying, no, this doesn't make sense. See, maybe he would say to himself, well, I love to hope, but it runs against common sense. I mean, once people die, they die. They don't rise again. Or maybe for Thomas, it's against the way of the world. We'd love to hope, but we know that the big crush the small. And here's Jesus coming up against the might of the Roman army, and he lost. And so we think there's no hope. Or maybe we just feel this morning, I love it if we can make it, but who knows? Who knows if there can be any hope after all? See, Thomas doesn't see, and because of that, Thomas doesn't believe. And like us, he's left with that question: where can hope be found? But yet, Thomas does change, because secondly, we see here that Thomas goes on to believe. Have a look at verse 26, where we read, "A week later, his disciples were in the house again, and Thomas was with them. Though the doors were locked, Jesus came and stood among them and said, 'Peace be with you.' Then he said to Thomas, 'Put your finger here, see my hands, reach out your hand and put into my side. Stop doubting and believe.'" See, the Yale lock is on the front door, and yet Jesus appears amongst the disciples. And he invites Thomas to do a live autopsy. Pretty gruesome stuff this, isn't it? A live autopsy on him. Now, it's worth saying in passing here, and do ask me about this later, that those details are given, I think, for a good reason, to show us that this isn't just some hallucination. See, the thing about hallucinations is you can't touch them. You can't put your finger into hallucinations. And the thing is, I don't know as much as this as a psychiatrist and psychologist, but I'm told that hallucinations like this might happen to an individual, but they don't happen to a group. And there's at least 11 here. And elsewhere in the New Testament, we're told that a group of 500 Jesus appeared to at one time. See, here is John telling us that Jesus really has risen. And Thomas certainly makes that conclusion. Look at what he says in verse 28. Thomas said to him, "My Lord and my God." Now, if you're a Jewish person, to say such a thing about a human being is unthinkable. It's the sort of thing that could get you in masses of trouble. But Thomas is absolutely convinced that that is true of the person he sees in front of him. And in fact, John, through this whole gospel, has tried to convince you and me that that's the case. Right at the beginning of this book, the very first verse, he says this: "In the beginning was the Word," talking about Jesus, "and the Word was with God, and the Word was God." And right from the beginning of this book, John has made the case for why that is true, why Jesus is human, but he is also God himself. And here, right at the end of John's gospel, we see Thomas come to that realization that actually God himself has come into our world in the person of Jesus, and now Thomas believes. But I want to ask yourself the question: what is it that changes Thomas at this point? Notice it's not that he sort of woke up one day and thought, "Do you know what? I feel quite religious." He didn't wake up one day and think, "Oh, you know, the church scene's pretty cool. I want to get into that." He didn't wake up thinking, "Look, I've got to have faith here and I've got to kind of muster myself up to believe these things." See, he believed rather because of the evidence in front of them. So I think in our culture, there's a real misunderstanding when it comes to this idea of faith. Often we think about faith as belief despite the evidence. But actually, Christian faith is never spoken of in that way. It is belief because of the evidence. I don't know if you're familiar with the idea of the black swan. The black swan, for centuries, was a kind of mythical figure that was a bit like a unicorn. Sorry to disappoint you, they are mythical, I think. And flying pigs. Even there was a Roman poet, it sounds like a huge sexist, but he said this: a good wife is a rare bird in the earth, very much like a black swan. Now, I'm not complete sexist, but you get the point that actually there was this kind of mythical creature for centuries, a bit like the way we talk about flying pigs and that sort of thing. And then in the 1600s, Dutch sailors started to arrive on the west coast of Australia. And would you guess what they saw? They saw one of these. You have to use your imagination. They saw a black swan. And oh, here it is. Sorry. Thank you. Sorry. Right, it's behind you. Come on. That's it. Yeah, they saw one of these. And it must have been amazing. Imagine seeing this for the first time, and you've been told for centuries that this is a mythical creature. It's hard to get your head around what they must have felt as they saw this creature emerging. But the thing is, they had to then change their mind. This could no longer be just a figure of speech. It had to be a real animal. And it's similar here. See, the belief in Jesus, the faith that Thomas has, isn't his wishful thinking. It is a response to the evidence before him. Going back to that song by the band 1975, there's a moment, I think we called it in the clip, where they say, "Jesus, save us, modernity has failed us." And it's a very striking line, isn't it? It's a cry, like, we know modernity's not working, we know this world is rubble, but Jesus, save us. But of course, it's not said with any sort of sense of meaning. In fact, the band's main singer admits to being an atheist, and he says this about that line. He says, "I want salvation just as much as the next person. I envy the faithful. If there's anyone who's got some good evidence on all this God stuff, give it to me, because now is the time. I will eat it up." And the answer to that is the resurrection. See, there is good grounds for hope. There is salvation. See, let's be honest. Something happened in the first century that drove this sect of frightened believers to changing the world as we know it. And the big question is, what was it? See, Thomas is showing us that it was as difficult as it might be to believe, as difficult as it might be to imagine, that this really happened. That God came into this world and rose from the dead in the person of Jesus. And here, for you and me, is the key question when it comes to the Christian faith. Maybe we come this morning and we're unsure what we think about God. Perhaps we've got a billion questions buzzing around in our head, but this is the central question. Did the resurrection happen or not? Or perhaps we come this morning just losing all hope. Perhaps we come here and we think, what is the point? And we're tempted to give up on life. We're tempted to give up on optimism. And of course, that doesn't come from ourselves. It comes from this resurrection. See, if this happened, then there is hope. There is a reason to live. And I guess for all of us, we will all have our moments of doubt where we think, is this worth staking my life on? And again, we come back to the resurrection. If this happened, absolutely is the answer. But I guess that some of us may be thinking to ourselves, well, it's all right for Thomas because he was there. He saw. What about me? Because let's be honest, unless we've got a time machine, we can't experience what Thomas experienced. But as we see in our third and final point, that separation in time is not a reason to not believe. See, Jesus' response here is very interesting because you might expect Jesus to say, "Well done, Thomas, you've come to the right conclusion." But he doesn't. Notice what he does say in verse 29. "Because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed." See, Jesus is saying it's got that sort of sense of rebuke to it. He's saying, look, Thomas, you've believed me because you've seen me. The ones who are truly blessed are the ones who believe without seeing me. Now, what Jesus is not saying there is that we should have blind faith. After all, he's showing himself to his disciples. He's given the evidence. But what he is saying to Thomas is, Thomas, you should have believed because of what you heard from the disciples. See, all through this book, Jesus has set up these disciples, these ordinary blokes, as the means of taking this message to the world. And Thomas has been there. He's heard this. And they should when they told him, Thomas should have trusted. I've got a friend who a few weeks ago bumped into Lenny Henry in a hotel, and he told me about it. It was quite funny. He said to him, what are you doing here? It's not a Premier Inn. And I can't repeat what Lenny Henry said back, but my friend told me this, and my initial response wasn't, well, you're lying. It wasn't, well, that doesn't happen every day, so that can't be true. Because I know my friend, because he doesn't go around making up stories about bumping into celebrities, I had every reason to believe him. And the same is true for here. See, do we have reason to doubt that this is wrong? Are these the type of people that are misleading us? See, Thomas was a huge skeptic, and yet he came to the only conclusion he could. And what is true for Thomas, John says, is also true for you and me. Look at what John says in verse 30. Jesus did many other miraculous signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not recorded in this book. But these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing, you may have life in his name. Notice what John says here. He's been purposely selective. He's given us 21 chapters. But those 21 chapters are there because they're enough to convince us that we can really believe. See, Thomas had all the evidence he needed. He had the disciples saying, we have seen the Lord. And the same is true of you and me here this morning, 20 centuries later. We have the disciples saying to us in this book, we have seen the Lord. This is true. You can hope. And the question is, will we trust those eyewitnesses? Perhaps we come this morning with all sorts of questions, as I say, and we're not sure whether we can find hope. We're not sure what we think of the future. Perhaps we're tempted, like that band, to say, I love it if we make it, but who knows? But John says, because of these eyewitnesses, because Jesus has risen, you can have hope. You can believe this. Now, perhaps we're here this morning and this is completely new to us. Perhaps it's your very first time in St. Mary's and you're thinking, whoa, this is, you know, what's a resurrection? Why is Jesus the Son of God? Well, you're very welcome here and we love to help you think this through more yourself. But this book is there for you to read. You can read through John's Gospel. We'd love to give you a copy. Why not read that? In the new term, we're going to be offering a course that gives an opportunity to look through one of these Gospels and to read it for ourselves and make up our own mind. Why not sign up for that? Do come and chat to me afterwards. Again, maybe some of us don't know what we believe. We've still got those questions, but this is the one to focus on. Perhaps read this book and think to ourselves, what do I make of this? And for those of us who do believe, this is designed to bolster our confidence. This is here to show us that actually we can really put our full weight on it. We can determine our lives around this truth. The tradition of the church was that Thomas, after this point, went out to India. And in those days, going to India was really a one-way trip, and it certainly was for Thomas. See, imagine that, this figure who just here we see is disbelieving, saying it can never happen, suddenly thinks to himself, I'm going to go to India and spend my life telling others about this event. And it is an illustration of what all these disciples did. They went from this terrified huddle to changing the world as we know it. And I'm convinced that that's because this event did happen. And if this event did happen, we don't have to stay with that kind of vague sense, oh, I love it if we made it. But we can say, there is hope. I will make it. We will make it. Because Jesus has made it. Let's take a minute there to pause and put any questions in, and then I'll hand back to Zoe.
So, Rob, the top question is, beyond the Bible, what evidence is there for the resurrection? And that particularly, are there any books you could recommend where it's critically analysed? And someone else also asked a similar question. If we have the same opinion as that singer who wants more evidence for all this God stuff, where would you point someone?
Yeah, thank you. Great question. There are some books that were written around the time. So Josephus was a Jewish historian, not a Christian by any stretch of imagination. And he wrote two books, The Jewish War and The Iniquities. And he writes about some of this. And there are a few other sort of letters and things that go around from Romans to each other, to, like what to do with these Christians and what they believe. It's worth saying, though, that the Bible is a collection of books that give evidence for the resurrection. So I would encourage you not to dismiss the Bible in looking at that evidence, because all the church did was like gather up all the evidence and put it in this Bible. Often we think of the Bible as one book. It's not really. It's a library of 66 books, and it's a library designed to make the case for the resurrection. So the fact that it's in the Bible doesn't, I don't think, invalidate the evidence for the resurrection. Yes, there's some outside there, but actually, this is the evidence. So it's worth engaging with that, first and foremost. How would I answer the singer? Well, hopefully, I've made a case in that sermon to think, actually, there is good reason to have hope because of the resurrection. So I would encourage him to come and listen online if he's listening. Probably not.
Great. So another really highly rated question here, which is quite topical, quite pertinent, is someone says, I have a friend who feels truly hopeless in the face of climate change and who believes there's no solution. How would you communicate how Christianity addresses this and how to provide hope?
Thank you. There's lots I could say about this, lots to say about what the climate is, what the earth is, our responsibility, all those sorts of things. But I can only say a little bit. I think just to emphasize that I understand that reason for despair. It is frightening, isn't it, to think of all these kind of things we're being told, and yet no one really seems to be changing anything. And so I can understand there are huge amounts of people actually really living with that sense of fear every day because of that. So I completely understand where people are coming from. I guess I'd want to say that actually because of the resurrection, everything changes. With the resurrection, it's kind of like the everything kind of rests on it. I'm trying to think of something that rests on it. It's, yes, everything kind of pivots on this question of the resurrection. Mm-hmm. So Jesus promises that actually he's going to make a new world, a renewed world, where actually things like climate change won't ruin it, things like our sin won't ruin it, where actually relationships will be perfect, where we live with God. That's a promise that comes at the end of the Bible. And the resurrection's like a kind of sneak preview of that new world. Now, that doesn't mean we can trash this world. It doesn't mean that we don't need to think through how we use the resources of this world. But it does mean there's no reason to despair completely. Because, yes, things might be bumpy. Things may, climates may change. But actually, ultimately, because of the resurrection, we can have hope because God has proved it in the raising of Jesus.
That's really helpful. Yeah, because I think Christianity makes a lot of claims, doesn't it, about the world, about life, and about the future. But yeah, like you say, the resurrection is a really kind of is one really concrete, specific claim that's made in quite a specific time period. So that's why it's worth focusing on the resurrection to sort of show that's where Christianity gets its credibility from, essentially.
Exactly, yeah. It's like God's kind of teased out a bit of the future and dragged it into our present in the resurrection. So, yeah.
Great. I think we've just got time for one last question. So someone says, we can determine our lives around this truth. So what difference should Christian hope make to the way we live our lives in our context? So what does this hope actually mean day to day?
Wow. that is a very big question. Very good question. Very big one. In essence, I think it's this idea of hope that actually our whole perspective changes because now we can look to the future and be optimistic. I don't know about you, but it's very easy, isn't it, to fear getting older, to fear the future. Our world doesn't like to look forward, it likes to look back. We look to the youth, and we look to trying to make ourselves look younger and all those sorts of things. And the resurrection changes that all because now we can look forward and think there's hope here. Yes, life might be difficult now. Yes, there may be reasons to despair around the world, but actually, fundamentally, I've got absolutely I've got evidence before me that actually I can be hopeful. How does that change the Christian life? Well, how long have you got? For me, it's changed my life in many ways. I'm up here, for one, and never thought that was going to happen. Zoe will have another story, and we've heard from a couple this morning. So do go and, you know, if you're interested in that, do ask Christians around here, how has this changed you? But I think fundamentally, it's realizing the future is absolutely sure because of Jesus has risen that changes everything.
Great, thank you, Rob.
Do come and grab me. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so I was going to say, keep asking these questions. This is far from the only opportunity that you get to ask questions. Keep asking each other, what does this mean for your life today in Basingstoke? Keep asking each other, why do you believe in the resurrection? It's really great how we can encourage each other and build each other's faith by doing that. But now, David.